This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Scott Seidenberg back here with you. It is Live Bet Saturday here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Always on Twitter at ScottsOnAir and at VSiN Live. As we're monitoring the action, UFC 316 prelims are underway. Coming up later on tonight, the two main events, the women's bantamweight title fight between Juliana Pena, the champion, who is a massive underdog to the challenger, Kayla Williams, and Sugar Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili for the title fight that is a rematch of the fight in which O'Malley lost to Merab. That is the bantamweight title. So fight number two between O'Malley and Dvalishvili, where Merab is a now minus 325 favorite or so. We are two fights into the prelims. And in the first fight, we had an upset where, we had Andreas Gustafsson defeat Chaos Williams by unanimous decision, and he was north of plus 150, plus 155 or so on the line, and it looks like we're going to have another upset as Waldo Cortez Acosta looks to get a decision here over Sergey Spivak, and Acosta closed as plus 145 or so. So that looks like that's going to happen. We're going to have two upsets to start the prelims here. UFC 316. Keep an eye on what's going on in Major League Baseball. The Yankees, a little bit of an offensive surge last inning in the bottom of the fourth, as now the Red Sox lead has been cut to 8-5. So both starting pitchers did not have a great outing, as Ryan Yarbrough gave up 8 runs on 9 hits in 4 innings for the Yankees. He did strike out 3 with 2 walks. Garrett Crochet, meanwhile, 5 runs allowed on 6 hits in 4 innings, 7 strikeouts and 1 walk. Red Sox took a 1-0 lead in the top of the second inning. Yankees responded in the bottom of the second with an Austin Wells 3-run home run. And then the Red Sox put up a 5-spot in the top of the third. They added 2 more runs on a 2-run home run in the top of the fourth. Yankees responded with 2 runs in the bottom of the fourth. And that's where we sit right now. Top of the fifth inning, Red Sox with an 8-5 lead over the Yankees. Looking at your live total right now, 17.5 as we watch this. This game closed with a line of 7.5. It closed 7.5. And then we talked about betting the live over when it was 13.5. It's now 17.5. And I'd still lean towards more runs being scored in this game. It comes down to, if you think the Yankees, listen, if the Yankees come back and win, you never know. But right now, Yankees plus 356. On the live line. Meanwhile, in Milwaukee, this game has been trending all towards the under. Padres with a 1-0 lead over the Brewers. And this is one where I actually like playing a live over. Even though it's 1-0 in the bottom of the fifth inning, Steven Kolek has done a tremendous job here for the Padres. 4 shutout innings. But for the Brewers, Jose Quintana has gone 5 innings now, allowed just 1 run on 5 hits. But he has thrown 101 pitches. So Jose Quintana's night is done, which means that for the remainder of this game, for the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th innings for the Padres, they will face the Brewers' bullpen. And Milwaukee does not have an elite bullpen. Their bullpen ERA right now is 4.41. I would look to fade the bullpen here for Milwaukee, and I'd take a shot at a live over. It's 4.5 right now, minus 116 to the over, but you're telling me I only need 4 more runs for the rest of this game? There's a chance with it only being a 1-run game that we could be tied? I would take that chance, because if we are tied, then it goes into extra innings, of course, and you get the ghost runners. So I would take a shot on a live over at 4.5, knowing that for the next few innings, next half of this game, we're going to get the Milwaukee bullpen against this Padres lineup. So something I would keep an eye on here. Plus, we have a couple of games that will begin this hour, as the first one, Mariners-Angels at, 6:38 Pacific time. Luis Castillo against Jack Kakanowicz. Mets and Rockies at 6:40 Pacific. Clay Holmes against Herman Marquez. And then at 7:05 Pacific, it is the Orioles at the A's. Charlie Morton against Luis Severino. Last segment, I talked about the NBA Finals. Game number 2 is coming up tomorrow. And why betting early, and when I say early, I don't mean like before the market moves. I mean, betting early in the game is going to be your key to success, just like it was in game number one when we were on the Thunder in the first half. The key to this game is early for the Thunder and the Pacers. The first quarter is where you will look to attack this game. In these playoffs, in these NBA playoffs, we have had seven games already where the home favorite lost game number one. In the following games, in game number two, those home teams are outscoring their opponents 31-17 in the first quarter. That's right. The road teams that win game number one in upset fashion on the road, in game number two, those teams are only averaging 17 points in the first quarter. That includes the Pacers twice in this postseason, in which they won game number one on the road in Cleveland, and in game number two, only scored 15 points in the first quarter, as they were dominated in that first quarter. They won game number one against the Knicks in historic come-from-behind fashion, just like they did in game number one here against the Thunder. And even though they scored 24 points in that first quarter against the Knicks, they still lost the first quarter. And they still went under their team total of 25.5. On the other side, the Thunder found themselves in this exact situation earlier in this postseason. They lost game one to the Nuggets at home. And in game number two, the Thunder responded by blowing out the Nuggets 45-21 in the first quarter of game number two. And yes, we had the Nuggets go under their team total. So just with these three teams alone, the Pacers twice went under their first quarter team total after winning game one on the road. The Thunder held an opponent under their first quarter team total after losing game one at home. And in all three situations, the Pacers lost the first quarter twice. The Thunder won the first quarter there one time. Again, first quarter, the home teams that lose game one are outscoring their opponents in game number two in the first quarter, 31-17. But that's just in the seven games that have happened in this postseason. Let's go back the last several postseasons. Beginning in 2021, the post-COVID year, the home team loses game one in the NBA playoffs. In game number two, they outscore their opponents in the first quarter 29-23. The edge here is in the first quarter. And there's multiple ways to play this. You can play the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first quarter. You can lay the -4 points or so in the first quarter, which is wild. This is taxed so much by the books because they understand the zigzag. We know the zigzag comes into play here, not just in these NBA playoffs where you're hitting at, what, 65% if all you did was just bet on the team that lost the previous game to then cover the next game, but also you're looking at how dominant this role has been for these teams. And so, yeah, the Thunder are now 11-point favorites for the game. They're 4.5-point favorites in the first quarter. So you can lay the 4.5. Or you can get creative. If you don't want to lay 4.5 in the first quarter, you could do a first quarter money line, which is -285, but make it a double result. So play the double result in the game, which would be, you know, Thunder to win the first quarter and Thunder to win the game. That result, let's pull up the same game parlay here, and I'll just build it on DK for, you know, to make it easy for everybody. But different books do offer first quarter Thunder, full game Thunder. Let's see. That market is -140. What? No, that says sec. Oh my goodness! You know something? That's second quarter. How about that? DK's not even offering you first quarter. That's how strong. Oh, here we go. First quarter Thunder, full game Thunder, minus 175. I'd lay it. That's a lot. I would bet. That is a bet. That's the bet right there. Thunder to win the first quarter, Thunder to win the full game. Now, the only reason why I would hesitate on that, and it's not my best bet, is because in that situation, because the tie is an option, you lose if the game is tied at the end of the first quarter. So I would look, if you're going to play that, play it at a book that allows you to same game parlay the first quarter money line with the full game money line, because then if it winds up being a tie in the first quarter, you at least get that push. You don't get the loss there. But the best bet for me is to go Pacers first quarter team total under 25 and a half. And again, the numbers speak for itself. In this playoffs, the road team wins game number one. In game number two, they are averaging just 17 points in the first quarter. Going back to 2021, they're averaging 23 points in the first quarter. And the Pacers have done it twice already in this postseason, scoring 15 against the Cavs in game number two, scoring 24 against the Knicks in game number two in that series. Both times, they went under their first quarter team total of 25 and a half. I'm Scott Satterberg. More Major League Baseball updates. Plus, we're getting to the Stanley Cup Final. It's all coming up here on Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back here on Live Bet Saturday, I'm Scott Seidenberg here with you on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. You can hit me up on Twitter at ScottsOnAir, ScottsOnAir. Hit us all up on the network at VSiN Live. Coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to be joined by our very own Dave Ross as we'll get his take on the main card for tonight's UFC 316, highlighted by the rematch between Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili, where Merab is now north of a minus 300 favorite. We'll get you the updated odds here on DraftKings. Merab actually is low, has dropped down here. So maybe some money coming in on O'Malley or the market adjustments here. Merab minus 270, O'Malley plus 220. And the second main event, the women's bantamweight title fight, Juliana Pena, the champion, is plus 455, as Kayla Harrison, the dog, minus 625. Here's what I can tell you about Kayla Harrison, and we'll get more information, as I mentioned, from our very own Dave Ross coming up next segment. She is the best, and I don't know the proper word for it, so you'll have to excuse me because I'm not like a big mixed martial arts person here. Whatever the term is for a judo fighter, is it judokin? Is that the proper term? She's the best judo fighter that's ever been in the UFC. And that includes Ronda Rousey, who was known for being a world-class, one of the best in the world, judo experts. But Ronda Rousey never won the international championships, the gold medals that Kayla Harrison has won. Like, Kayla Harrison is the most decorated judo fighter, the women, ever. Pretty much. Just the amount of gold medals and everything that she's won in judo. So it's, to me, not a surprise that she's an overwhelming favorite here over Juliana Pena. But we'll talk to Dave Ross coming up to see if he thinks the champ can steal one here as a pricey, pricey dog. I can tell you right now, the market favorite for a result here is Harrison by decision. Harrison by submission, because of her judo expertise here. So more on UFC 316 coming up in about 15 minutes or so with our very own Dave Ross will join me, Scott Seidenberg, right here on Live Bet Saturday. Speaking of live bets in Major League Baseball right now, the Yankees trailing the Red Sox 8-5 in the bottom of the fifth inning. So this was an 8-3 game. Yankees chipped away earlier, and Garrett Crochet is still in the game for the Red Sox as it is one out in the bottom of the fifth inning. Crochet has gone 4 1/3 now, 5 runs on 6 hits, 7 strikeouts, and the only run allowed was because he allowed a single that scored some runs here, but he did allow a 3-run home run to Austin Wells. Ryan Yarbrough, meanwhile, has allowed 8 runs on 9 hits in 4 innings. He also allowed a home run. And De Los Santos in the game now pitching for the Yankees, he had a didn't allow a run there in the top of the 5th inning. Yankees do have a runner on here as there is nobody out. So I guess there was maybe a challenge or something. I thought it said one out. But anyway, 8-5 is the score. Yankees have a runner on. Aaron Judge is up here in the bottom of the 5th inning. So one swing from Judge, and this becomes an 8-7 ball game. Your live total is at 17.5. And we'll see if Judge can get something going here against Garrett Crochet. Elsewhere, the Padres still holding on to that 1-0 lead over the Brewers as they head to the bottom of the 6th inning there in Milwaukee. As Steven Kolek still in the game for the Padres. 5 shutout innings right now with just 2 hits allowed for San Diego. And then we have 3 games coming up at the bottom of this hour. Last night, game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final went into overtime just like game number 1. A rare feat. We hadn't had 2 games go into overtime in the first 2 games of the Stanley Cup Final in quite some time as Garrett Crochet strikes out Aaron Judge. So not a good night for the MVP as, strikeout. Aaron Judge striking out against Garrett Crochet. But games 1 and 2 going to overtime in the Stanley Cup Final, just incredibly rare. And we look at what has played out in this series as the Oilers get the game 1 win on the game-winning goal by Leon Draisaitl, our guy. We have Draisaitl, Conn Smythe. We'll update you on the Conn Smythe odds, by the way. But we got Draisaitl, Conn Smythe. He scored the game winner in game number 1. Brad Marchand scored the game winner in game number 2. And what an acquisition he has been for the Florida Panthers. But if we look at this series as a whole, it is now 8-8 in terms of goals. If you match up the entirety of the first 2 games, and if you look at all situations playing out, whether it's even strength or the power plays, whether it's a man advantage, whatever it is, 4-on-4, all that stuff, just in every situation in the games, in games 1 and 2, combined, as I mentioned, 8-8 is the score, as we had identical 4-3 wins in overtime. And by the way, I mean, how ridiculous, or that was a 5-4 win, excuse me, by the Panthers over the Oilers in game number 1, game number 2. Game number 1 was the 4-3 victory by the Oilers. Game number 2, 5-4. How crazy was the Oilers tying it there at the end of regulation to send it into overtime? I mean, the way that the puck bounces, and I heard Wayne Gretzky on the broadcast there for TNT and talking about how the fact that the Panthers kept, you know, when they iced the puck there late, that's what led to them losing. And I kind of agree with it in like some aspects because, yeah, you want to shoot for the empty net because you put the game away there, but also you run the risk of when you ice the puck now, there's an offensive zone faceoff, and if there is a timeout available, it gives the team like the Oilers to get their big guys a rest, and then it's a faceoff in the offensive zone with the top players out there for the Oilers, and if they win the faceoff, they get possession in the offensive zone, yeah, they're going to have an opportunity to score. Meanwhile, if you don't shoot for the empty net and you try to extend the play a little bit, chip it up the boards slowly, or maybe just skate with the puck, a little bit of possession, pin it up against the boards, you don't run the risk of icing, you don't have a faceoff in your offensive zone. Yes, you don't get the opportunity to get the empty net and go up by 2 and really solidify the game, but you're just kind of playing that clock game. You're kind of just milking the possession away. Might have been a better outcome for Florida if they decided to do that. I'm curious if we have a situation, in game number 3 where it's a 1-goal game late, if this idea that was, again, floated by Gretzky on the broadcast that is now being talked about and some, you know, hockey writers are writing about it, analysts are debating it, I wonder if this is something that coaches and players might be influenced by. Should we get to a situation like that in game number 3 where it's, hey, if it's a 1-goal game, if it's a 2-goal game, yeah, we shoot for the empty net. But if it's a 1-goal game, do we shoot for the empty net like we've always done? Or do we now embrace this debate and maybe we don't? Because maybe Gretzky's making sense. And I know that this is going on. Just everyone's kind of talking about it in the wake of how that game played out. But let's look at all situations here, okay? Because if we compare the games and we have, you know, what has played out between both of these teams, again, we look at the situations and we see how game one played out and game two played out. In game number one, which was the 4-3 result for the Edmonton Oilers in overtime, the expected goals in that game, Florida, or the Oilers, 4.49, Florida, 3.88. So Edmonton should have won that game about 5-4, and they win 4-3. Kind of plays out the way the analytics say it should have played out. In game number two, the Panthers win 5-4 in overtime, but get this, the expected goal numbers, 5.74 for the Oilers, 4.2 for the Panthers. So you can make the argument the Oilers should have won that game 6-4. Now, a lot goes into these expected numbers. Your possession, your shots, the quality of your shots, the high danger scoring chances. There's a whole way to look at this game from an analytical perspective. But it's interesting that we have an even series, but you can make the argument that one team in particular, and in this case, it's the Edmonton Oilers, have actually outplayed their opponent. And so when I look at game number three, and I look at this series as a whole, I'm not surprised that the Panthers are a greater favorite in game number two than the Oilers were in games one and two at home. I expected that to be the case. I figured the Florida Panthers would be minus 140, minus 145 or so in games three and game number four. But to me, that shows value now on the Edmonton Oilers in both of these games. I with all due respect to the Panthers, I don't see how you don't take the value with Edmonton in both of these games. Hey, this summer you can go all in here at Circa Las Vegas with the ultimate getaway package. Just $400 all in, and get this. You're going to get a two-night stay here at Circa. You're going to get a $100 dining credit, a $100 beverage credit, and your very own day bet at Stadium Swim. That's the best part about this. No minimum spend. You hang out and watch sports at Stadium Swim all day. My goodness, it's just $400, resort fees and taxes included. It's a limited time offer, valid through September 4th. Book now at CircaLasVegas.com. Our very own Dave Ross joins me, Scott Seidenberg, next here on Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back here on Live Bet Saturday, I'm Scott Seidenberg with you on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, as we are into the prelims here of UFC 316 live from The Rock, the Prudential Center there in Newark. A couple of fights already in the books of the prelims, and we've had some upsets. Andreas Gustafsson upsets Chaos Williams by unanimous decision. You could have gotten him around plus 150 or so. Waldo Cortez Acosta wins in a unanimous decision over Sergey Spivak. Again, could have gotten him at around plus 140, plus 145 odds. And the big favorite, minus 800, Azamat Mirzakhanov defeats Brenson Ribeiro in the next fight. And right now we are awaiting the flyweight bout between Bruno Silva and Joshua Vaughn, where, again, we have a massive favorite. Vaughn is a minus 800 favorite. You heard the woo, the man next to me in studio, the host of VSiN by the Books, and our great UFC expert, Dave Ross, joining me here on Live Bet Saturday. So what do you think of the card so far?
I like it because I had Salsa Boy. I had Cortez Acosta. I don't know how he won the fight. Look, I was leaving to come down here to join you for this, and this happens all the time in MMA. We talk about it a lot on By the Books, too. Remember some of these that go your way? Because I thought Sergey Spivak won the fight. Even though I bet Salsa Boy, I thought Spivak won rounds one and three. I don't think it was close in round one. And somehow a judge had it 30-27 for Salsa Boy, meaning they gave him every round, including that first round, which I don't know how in the world you could have scored that for Acosta Cortez. But I'll take it because, again, you've been on the other side of these so many times where they go against you. I'll take Salsa Boy here. Now, if Joshua Van, the big $8 betting favorite, if he closes and wins, I'm going to cash a couple 8-1 parlays out there. He's my last one.
All right. We love that. By the way, I don't like you making me feel worse about my loss on betting Spivak.
You should have won that.
By telling me that I should have won.
It was a wrong.
I don't like hearing that.
Bad judging. Good bet by you.
If I'm going to lose a fight, I want my guy to get knocked out in the first round. And this way I can just say, you know what?
I was on the wrong side. Yeah.
That's it. I lost the bet. It's all right. But coming up, this is the last fight of the prelims. Yep. Bruno Silva against Joshua Vaughn. As I mentioned, Vaughn is a minus 800 favorite, which is crazy. But then we get into the main card here where it'll be Kevin Holland as probably, let's see, let's look at the updated odds here, some of these fights. Kevin Holland minus 185 against Vicente Luque. Then the next fight on the main card is going to be Mario Bautista against Patchy Mix.
Yes.
That's a great name. Right now, Patchy Mix is minus 180. And further up the card, we got Kelvin Gastelum against Joe Pyfer.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Pyfer a minus 360 favorite. And then this is crazy. Women's bantamweight title fight. Two main events tonight. Women's bantamweight title. The champion, Juliana Pena, against Kayla Harrison. Mm-hmm. The challenger, Kayla Harrison, minus 600 over Juliana Pena, Dave. Minus 600 for the challenger.
Slap in the face to the Venezuelan vixen.
So how do we find value in betting this fight?
You bet the over 3.5 at +$1.05. I do like that play in the co-main event here. And by the way, in that fight, it's dog or pass for me. You know, I cannot weigh that price point with Kayla Harrison. By the way, her weight cut has been talked about a lot, and she's a professional, Kayla Harrison. She made the cut. She looked terrible on the scale. Rehydrated, looks better. You know who doesn't have a problem making bantamweight? Juliana Pena, the reigning champion. You know who beat Amanda Nunes at this weight? Juliana Pena, the GOAT in women's MMA, is Amanda Nunes. And go back and watch that first fight if you have time. She destroyed Amanda Nunes that night. She lost a rematch, obviously. There could be a trilogy. Amanda Nunes is going to be there, octagon side, today. She says she's coming back no matter what, whether it's the trilogy against Juliana Pena and or it's Kayla Harrison if we have Ann New. Look, if Harrison can control Juliana on the ground, she wins. But Juliana Pena is going to be very tough to submit down there because Kayla is really not a submission specialist. She's more of a control person when you get down to the ground. So can she control Juliana Pena for five rounds and win on the cards? Yeah. So if you want to play the big favorite, I'd look to her via decision. But I do like the over 3.5 rounds here at small plus money, because I think Pena, if she survives the first five, which I expect her to do, I think she's really live in this thing. You hit this judges' scorecards like we saw with Salsa Boy and the polar bear Spivak. You don't know what the judges see. I'd rather be on the side of the big dog if it hits the cards, which I think this fight more than likely will go.
Well, it's a 4.5 is the line here at DraftKings. It is plus 160 to the over 4.5. Or let's see if we do method of victory here. Winning method, you could take Pena by decision is 12-1, plus 1,200 for Pena by decision. For Harrison by decision, plus 225, which is not bad, because if you think this goes the distance, Dave, and you're telling me that Harrison is a control specialist, which, and I know you and I have talked about this briefly, and I mentioned it to the audience when previewing this fight a little bit, Kayla Harrison is the most decorated, I don't know what the word is, judo fighter.
Yeah, but since Ronda Rousey.
I say judo fighter. I know it's like judokin, judoka or something. It's a proper word that what we have
to say.
I say
judo too.
Judo fighter, okay? She's the most decorated that we've ever had in the UFC. We're talking about gold medal in 2012 in London, gold medal 2012 Tokyo World Championships, gold medal 2011 Pan American Games, gold medal 2011 Pan American, I mentioned that already, 2015 gold medal World Masters. I can go on and on. She wins everything.
Scott, this isn't
judo. She wins everything.
This isn't judo. That's why it's MMA. But, so you got to play the hands game, right, to get inside, to get Juliana down to the ground. So she's going to have to force Juliana into the octagon cage.
Mm.
And then if she can get her down to the ground, then you know it's going to be old school for people that remember Ronda in her heyday, looking for that arm. And she's going to look to try to get that arm bar.
The favorite outcome is Kayla by submission at plus 140.
That, again, that would make the more sense. If you want to play the big favorite, I understand that. I think it's more than likely, if she can't get it done early, I think that if Juliana can figure out a way to keep this fight standing, I think we're going to go for all five rounds here. I'd play those overs. I already played it at 3.5 at +$1.05. You get +$1.60 on 4.5. I don't mind laddering that up here, but I do think eventually this one might, it has, to me, the likelihood. I know the books don't say it. I think it's got the likelihood to go all five.
Well, it's an experience thing, too.
Yeah.
Like, we can talk about Kayla Harrison and how great she's looked. And frankly, I think it would be a better storyline if she wins, because it gives the women's division something to build up now.
Bring like, Nunes back.
Exactly. Mm. But if you think about, like, what UFC, with all due respect to these fighters, okay, this is an entertainment product.
Yeah.
And Dana White knows more than anybody how much you can sell a story and how much you can sell a fighter. I'm not comparing it to WWE wrestling, but this, there is a sales aspect to it.
Sure.
And so when you can get these fighters that can build up a storyline and you can build up a path for them to become the next biggest thing in the sport, you know, whether it's Bo Nickel, who's climbing up the men's ranks, who seemingly submits everybody in the first round every time he fights.
Until his last time out.
Until his last time right. out. You know, thank you. But again, reminding me of my losses. But I think Harrison has the ability to be built up should she win this. And it's like, whoa, all of a sudden here, we got some badass, we got a fighter here that we want to back now.
Promotion would love for Kayla Harrison to win this fight. And I think also, for being honest, as great as Merab Dioulashvili is in the main event against the Sugar Show, we know the Sugar Show is going to draw.
Yeah.
Sean O'Malley is going to be that guy if he can regain that bantamweight title in the main event. If he can get that done, that's exactly what you're talking about. If the corporation and the promotion has its way, it's Kayla Harrison and it's the Sugar Show Sean O'Malley. I do think both dogs are live in both bantamweight title bouts. Mm-hmm. I think the Venezuelan Vixen is live, especially the later the fight goes. I'm worried about the weight cut for Kayla. So if Kayla doesn't get it done early, look to the live numbers. See if they've adjusted it.
Ooh, good point.
Because I could see that adrenaline dump, that weight cut. Juliana's going to be fine. You saw it against Amanda Nunes. You saw that. She's going to be fine.
So we like Kayla early in the fight, and if it does go longer, look for a live bet on Juliana Pena because you can get a good money on her, especially if she loses the first couple of rounds because she's been on the ground the whole fight.
Correct.
Kayla could get tired out.
If this fight keeps going, we're into the fourth round all of a sudden, right? Mm. That means that the takedowns, even if she gets the takedowns, she's not doing anything with them. If she can't get Juliana out of there early, and after a while, those takedowns start to slow down, and then you can't get the takedown. That's where Juliana Pena is going to go to work. She did it against Amanda Nunes the first time out. I could see a similar scenario playing out here the deeper the fight goes.
I'm going to pull an old radio trick on you. You want to hang around for another segment?
Absolutely.
All right. This is what you do. You ask live so they can't say no this way beforehand. Because there's more to
get. We have so many more fights to talk about.
But there's more to get into with this main event between O'Malley and Merab as well. Because there's so many different ways that I want to look to bet that fight. But one final thing on Pena and Kayla. So I mentioned Kayla by decision plus 225. Pena by decision plus 1200. Would you take, if Pena wins, is the only way that she wins by decision?
That's what everybody thought the first time around against Amanda Nunes. And remember what happened. She almost knocked her out, and Amanda turtled up, gave up her neck, submission. Hmm. Now, look, I don't see that type of storyline playing out where she submits Kayla. That number would be absolutely through the roof. But I could see a scenario where if the takedowns are not effective and the fight stays standing as we go, Juliana's got some dog in her. She's going to let those hands go. More than likely, she's going to have to do real damage to Kayla, tire her out, and either get a knockout late and or win on the cards. But again, that's why my lean is over at plus money at 3.5 over, and then I take the adjusted 4.5 as well.
Yeah, plus 160 on the over 4.5 on DraftKings. And if you want the dog in Pena, plus 440 on the money line. Live line right now, Joshua Vaughn and Bruno Silva. Vaughn closed as north of minus 800. He's now minus 660. We call that value on the live line.
Oh.
We'll update you on that fight. Plus, we'll get to the Merab and O'Malley fight coming up next with Dave Ross. I'm Scott Seidenberg. It's Live Bet Saturday here on VSiN. Live Bet Saturday. I'm Scott Seidenberg, joined in studio by our very own Dave Ross, host of VSiN by the Books, every morning, bright and early, here on the Sports Betting Network. I mean, I don't know how you do it. I was on after you yesterday.
I did
a numbers game for Gil Alexander, and that was at, 7 a.m. Pacific time? I mean, you're in here hours before that.
This is normally bedtime for me.
Yeah.
Like, the weekends, it's like I get to stay up late. I feel like a 10-year-old kid again. Like, I get to stay up and watch all the fights. This is fantastic.
Well, you also get to stay up and watch your Mets.
Yes.
Top of the first inning, the Mets do have a runner on second with one out, as we did lay the minus 1.5 on the Mets here, because we always love laying the minus 1.5 with the Rockies. Had a little sweat last night until Francisco Lindor, bad toe and all, pinch hit with that two-run double as the Mets took a 4-2 lead and went on to win 4-2.
I'm in a group text called Meet the Mess. We're not Meet the Mets. And we're all freaking out. It's over. Season's done. Frankie's going to go to the DL. And then all of a sudden, we're like, hit his music, baby. It's Frankie Lindor last night to save the day. Polar bear Pete Alonso. I don't know where the Mets would be if they let him walk in the offseason. I really don't.
That's one of the biggest factors that I've talked about all season when it comes to the Mets. The year, especially because Juan Soto has struggled. Now, I know Soto's come on over the last week or so, but Juan Soto has struggled mightily this entire season. If Pete Alonso was not having the year that he's having, which in any other year would be MVP caliber, I mean, I don't know. You're right. I don't know where the Mets would be this year without him.
Can I write off the Braves yet? Is it? Do I have to keep looking in the rear view? Is that thing over? Because I look at it and I go, it's the Mets and the Phillies now for the NL East.
And it's where it's been from the start of the year, Mets and Phillies. But I would agree with that for sure. So the Mets, let's see if they can get some runs here early. It was a pitching change for the Rockies. It was supposed to be Palmquist starting. They changed it. Germán Márquez starting instead. And Pete Alonso is up. I wouldn't mind a two-run shot here from Alonso.
Let's go pull
in the top of the first inning. But Dave Ross joining me in studio here as we're talking about UFC 316. The main event coming up later on is the round two, the rematch. Merab Dvalishvili against Sugar Sean O'Malley. Merab wins by decision in the first fight. And that's obviously the favorite outcome here in this second fight. We're looking at the over 4.5, minus 245 to the over. Is there any way in your mind, can you see this fight not going distance?
There's only one way, and that's if the Sugar Show snipes out Merab Dvalishvili. But we've seen, the only time I've ever seen Merab really hurt in the UFC was, you had to go back to a guy named Magic Marlon Moraes, and Marlon had him out. And when he had him out, he's still, it's like Merab figures out a way to get to his feet and survive. And it was amazing to watch that night. So if Marlon Moraes couldn't get him out when he was literally punch drunk, and then Merab has this incredible way of somehow recovering and then dominating the rest of that fight, I don't see this fight getting stopped. But it would take a snipe attack like he did against Aljamain Sterling, who, by the way, trains with Merab Dvalishvili for the Sugar Show to get this out. People have been asking me, can Merab knock him out? I'm hearing about Merab has really been more physical in training, and he's been working on his ground and pound. No, he can't. He's not going to be able to submit Sean O'Malley. I don't think he can knock out Sean O'Malley. So the pathway to victory for Merab is via decision again. And by the way, I was heavy on Merab the first time around, and I'm not this time around. Sugar has changed up some things. He's not going to dye his hair.
I saw that. Smoking weed.
He's off the weed. And then some other things I can't talk about that he's given up before this fight.
They weaken the legs, I hear.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So let's just say whether or not any of that is for his, you know, it's that placebo effect. Does it really help, or do you just think that it helps? I think that's where we are right now with the Sugar Show. I think he thinks it's going to make him better this time around. Mm. And for that reason, he still has the quickest hands in the division. If he doesn't have the fear that he can get hurt by Merab, to me, this could be a longer fight. And all of a sudden, can Sean O'Malley win on points? Absolutely. He can win on points. Remember, judging is very subjective. But the rules that they have been given as judges is you're supposed to judge by damage first. Who's going to do more damage if the fight stays standing? If Merab can't get those vaunted takedowns that he always gets, if he doesn't get those this time around, Sean's going to win a hands game. So that's where the two-way chance of a KO by Sean, it would have to be late, I would think very late, and or Sean O'Malley on points, I could absolutely see that scenario playing out.
Winning method right now up on DraftKings, Sean O'Malley by KO, TKO, DQ is plus 450. O'Malley to win by decision, plus 700. So if you wanted to sprinkle on those two, just looking at Merab's fight record, the last time he won not in a decision was a TKO against Marlon Moraes.
That's the fight.
In 2021, September 25th, 2021.
He was almost out. He was almost out in that fight and came back to stop Magic Marlon Moraes that night.
Before that, his last knockout was in 2017, a spinning back fist KO against Rufian Stotts. Before that, a TKO in his second ever pro fight against Dennis Dombrow in September of 2014. Every other fight has gone the distance.
Now look, this doesn't take away from the greatness of Merab as champion. It really doesn't. It's like sometimes you go, oh, he's boring. He's the ultimate one-trick pony. It's the best trick we have right now, at least at 135 pounds. Nobody does it better than Merab when it comes to the takedowns, right? But if you go back to the Peter Yan fans, don't listen to me right now. When Peter Yan fought the Sugar Show, I was on Sean O'Malley that day. It was over a $2 betting underdog against a great catch wrestler in Peter Yan. I thought Peter Yan won that fight. The judges saw it for O'Malley. And I went, oh, How do they do that? Damage. They thought he did more damage to Petr Yan that I don't think he did. But the point being, if this is a close fight, again, I'd rather be on the big dog at plus 250 if this fight hits the cards. If it's a back-and-forth affair, like, I can't see Sean O'Malley being taken down repeatedly and then just, like, giving up but not being submitted, right? He's going to keep working to get back to his feet. He knows if the fight stays standing, that's where he's got a massive advantage.
Well, listen, it's fun betting these dogs because I always say...
He's a live dog, Scott. He absolutely is.
But I always say that in UFC, like, everybody's a live dog because this is a combat sport. All it takes is one punch, and sometimes people get lucky. And or somebody gets unlucky, or somebody gets surprised. And next thing you know, it's like, wait a minute, I can't see out of my left eye. Something happens.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, like, you shouldn't be surprised. I know we say it all the time. It's like, oh, they were plus 700 dogs. We're shocked. It's a fight. Like, it can happen.
Well, let me give you another dog that I like. Vicente Luque against the big mouth, Kevin Holland. I love Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland's a guy that says, oh, I'm going to come out here and fight six times a year. He just likes to fight. Kevin Holland, as entertaining a fighter as he is, he's not a disciplined fighter.
Ooh.
Vicente Luque is a very disciplined fighter. So what I see here is a guy that's going to put on a show that Kevin Holland normally does and put himself in compromising positions where if I got to lay almost 3-1 on a guy like Kevin Holland, I go, why are you doing that, Kevin? If you get Vicente Luque at that price point at $2, I didn't get him that high. I would jump all over Luque.
Plus 150 on DK now.
It's come way down. Yeah. People are reading into this too. That's exactly where my money's going. I got a better price than that, so the money's coming in on Luque. That's a really sharp move. Luque is a professional fighter. He is limited, but he is a really good pressure fighter. If he gets those takedowns against Kevin Holland, he could really be in business there. I think Luque is way too big a dog, and that price is starting to correct itself.
Luque by decision, plus 450.
Not bad, except I will say this. If he gets the fight down to the ground and really smothers Kevin, Kevin sometimes will put himself in compromising positions.
Luque
where he
by
might,
submission, plus 650.
That's where you want to take a bigger stab. That's maybe where I'll go. Kevin Holland's not a quitter, by the way, but he will be submitted because he puts himself in compromising positions.
He is Dave Ross. You catch him weekdays early in the morning on VSiN by the Books. And if you don't catch the live show, you can listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from or check it out on the VSiN Watch app. I'm sure plenty of breakdown of UFC 316, maybe celebrating some tickets coming up on Monday morning, hopefully. And of course, recapping of NBA Finals game number 2, which is tomorrow night. So Monday morning, bright and early, Dave and Jensen will be breaking down NBA Finals game number 2 and previewing Stanley Cup Final game number 3.
Wow, what a series.
Between the Oilers and the Panthers. What an incredible series.
Unreal.
I mean, I'm glued to the TV.
I took a live stab on Florida when they hit overtime last night, and I felt zero good about that bet. But I was like, if you're going to keep giving me plus money, I might find myself back in Edmonton in game 3. Keep taking the plus money prices. They're that even.
Yeah, that's why. And I said, and I knew this was going to be the case, and I said it before the series even started, and I firmly am behind it now. We knew that Florida was going to be a heavier favorite in games 3 and 4 than Edmonton was in games 1 and 2.
That's right.
Take Edmonton at the plus money price in both game 3 and game number 4.
They have some guy named Connor McDavid. He's pretty good, I heard.
He is pretty good. Yeah. Hey, if you want to bet smarter this football season, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up today. You'll get full access to a daily email with the best bets from the hosts and the guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide coming out July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code BOOK to sign up. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Dave has just cashed his parlay.
Joshua Van by KO, by the way, gets home late. He gets a late stop. Just to cash those over $2 KO props for Joshua Van.
Well, we're rooting for both dogs tonight. Let's hope they come through. I'm Scott Seidenberg. It is Live Bet Saturday here on VSiN.